welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, March 31st, 2023. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. A story from the front page is titled Education Bill Survives Funnel, but Pipeline Bill Doesn't, by Aaron Murphy, Tom Barton, and Caleb McCullough. Dateline Des Moines. Sweeping education policy that, among other things, would define what kind of graphic material would lead to a book's removal from Iowa's K-12 schools advanced Thursday, surviving a key legislative deadline. So did legislation that would place some restrictions on how the state auditor could conduct investigations into state and local government entities. One bill that did not survive this week's deadline was a bill that would have required a high threshold for voluntary landowner participation in carbon capture pipeline projects before eminent domain could be pursued. They are among the most consequential developments of the 2023 Iowa legislative session's second funnel week, which concluded Thursday. The funnels are legislative deadlines designed to whittle the number of bills that state lawmakers can continue to consider during the session. The deadlines were established to force lawmakers to gradually shift their focus to bills that have sufficient levels of support. By the end of this week's deadline, bills to survive had to be passed by the chamber in which they were introduced, plus out of a committee in the other chamber. In other words, a bill that was introduced in the House needed to be passed by the full House and moved forward by a Senate committee. Bills that did not reach that legislative threshold by the end of this week, with some exceptions and caveats, are no longer eligible for consideration this year. The exceptions include any bill that contains state spending or tax policy. The caveat is that legislative leaders have multiple procedural tools that could resurrect any policy if that is their intent. House lawmakers advanced out of their Education Committee a bill that ties together transparency measures and restrictions on library books and LGBTQ instruction that Republicans previously advanced this session. Senate File 496 was amended in committee to provide a more detailed process for schools to notify parents if a student requests to be called by a different name or pronouns, to remove or change transparency measures in the original bill, and to specify rules prohibiting school library books with graphic depictions of sex acts. A requirement that students pass the U.S. citizenship test to graduate also were removed. The bill maintains the prohibition on teaching about gender identity or sexual orientation in kindergarten through sixth grade. The House committee also combined the bill with a number of bills the House has already passed dealing with the Board of Education examiners, health care, and seizure measures in public schools, among others. Representative Skylar Wheeler, a Republican from Hull who chairs the House Education Committee, said negotiations with the Senate to approve the changes to the bill are ongoing. Democrats in the House committee, who voted against the amendment and the bill, said they still oppose the portions of the bill restricting library books, removing requirements about teaching HPV and HIV in schools, and requiring parental notification if a student wants to transition genders. All of these bills are heinous and despicable and, quite frankly, un-American, said Amy Wichtendahl, a Hiawatha City Council member and the state's first transgender elected official. Wichtendahl was introduced on the House floor Thursday by Representative Ken Croken, Democrat of Davenport, in recognition of Transgender Day of Visibility today. We have a right to read. We have a right to explore new ideas. That's what this country was founded on, Wichtendahl said, adding that her friends' lives were destroyed in the 80s and 90s when they were forcibly outed as LGBTQ. While we would like to think parents would be supportive, the cold truth is not every parent is, Wichtendahl said. And sometimes that will make a difficult situation even worse, putting kids at risk of conversion therapy and homelessness. If the governor had any dignity or care for Iowa's children, she would pull this bill, Wichtendahl said, adding transgender Iowans are scared and wondering whether Iowa is the right place for them. Perhaps the most noteworthy bill that did not survive this week's funnel was a House-passed bill that would prohibit the use of eminent domain to acquire land for carbon dioxide pipelines unless the private companies reach voluntary easement agreements with at least 90% of land owners on the pipeline's planned route. The bill passed the House on March 22nd with bipartisan support, but did not get a subcommittee hearing in the Senate this week. The bill, House File 565, also was not among the dozens of bills placed on the Senate's unfinished business calendar, another tool by which legislative leaders can keep a bill alive beyond the funnels. Senate Republican leadership this session has not expressed an interest in regulating the projects, and only one bill addressing CO2 pipelines received a subcommittee hearing where it did not advance. I don't know what the future of that bill is. Obviously, right now, it's not looking like it's a very healthy future for it, House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican of New Hartford, told reporters Thursday. We still feel strongly about what we passed, and we really believe it was the right thing for us to do. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst, Democrat of Windsor Heights, criticized Senate Republicans for killing the bill, saying they were kicking the can down the road for something that we're not going to be able to avoid talking about. Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, Republican of Grimes, told Radio Iowa on Thursday the conversation isn't over on pipeline legislation in the Senate. We're hearing a lot from both sides and will continue to take that feedback and see if there's consensus in the caucus, he said. Right now, there isn't. One bill that survived the funnel would address more specifically how the state auditor could conduct investigations and resolve disputes with other state government agencies. Majority Republicans in the House tweaked Senate File 478 as they passed it out of the state government committee Thursday, but the thrust of the bill remains the same. The auditor's office would be required to declare when an investigation begins, would be limited from acquiring certain personal information during an audit, and any dispute with another state government agency, including the governor's office or other statewide offices, would be resolved by an arbitration panel and could not be taken to court. During a subcommittee hearing on the bill earlier this week, current state auditor Rob Sand, the only Democrat elected to statewide office in Iowa, accused Republican lawmakers of targeting him and thus undercutting the ability of the office to fully function as the state taxpayers' watchdog. If people want to target me, they should insult me and lie about me and say terrible things about me, Sand told reporters after the subcommittee meeting. This bill harms taxpayers. A bipartisan coalition of state auditors wrote Iowa lawmakers to say they believe the legislation would restrict the ability of the Iowa auditor to root out corruption in state and local government. Republicans say the bill protects Iowans' personal information and puts into state law general accounting standards. Proposals that would loosen child labor protections in the state failed to advance off the floor of either chamber but remain alive for further consideration. Both House File 647 and Senate File 542 were placed under unfinished business, meaning they still could be debated and passed this session. The legislation would allow teens to work longer, later hours in more jobs, including those formerly off-limits as being hazardous, and would allow 16- and 17-year-olds to serve alcohol at businesses with an alcohol retail license. Teens as young as 14 could request a waiver from the directors of the state workforce and education agencies to work as apprentices in factories, mines, construction sites, and warehouses, among others, as part of a work-based learning program. The bill also eliminates the Iowa Labor Commissioner's authority to require work permits for minors in certain occupations and give the state new discretion to waive, reduce, or delay civil penalties if an employer violates any child labor law. Both bills passed out of House and Senate Commerce and Workforce Committees on largely party-line votes and are pending consideration by either chamber. Republicans have said the bills would help businesses find workers in a tight labor market and help young Iowans become more engaged in work. Democrats and labor groups contend the measures weaken child labor protections and violate federal labor laws. Parents and union workers across the state gathered over the weekend to protest the proposals to roll back state child labor laws. Turning to the Iowa Today page, fertilizer kills 50,000 fish in Lynn Creek, owner fined, by Aaron Jordan. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources has ordered a Coggin landowner to pay more than $20,000 after an investigation showed fertilizer pumped from the property killed more than 50,000 fish in Dry Creek last fall. Patrick and Tracy Hames, who live in Batavia but own a fertilizer storage site near Coggin, must pay a $10,000 administrative penalty, the largest fine the DNR can assess, and an $11,400 in restitution and investigative costs, according to the order released Thursday. Hames violated multiple Iowa laws and rules related to the discharge of pollutants to the tributary, the pond, and Dry Creek, the DNR order said. The DNR was called to Lynn County on September 9th when a neighbor noticed dead fish in Dry Creek east of Walker. Brian Jurgensen, a senior environmental specialist in the Iowa DNR's Manchester field office, tested the water in several places, including in Dry Creek, a nearby pond, and upstream and downstream of a tile drainage line from the Hames' property, the report states. All the tests downstream of the tile showed ammonia nitrogen levels well over the state standard for water that supports wildlife. A review by DNR biologist Dan Kirby estimated that there were more than 50,000 dead fish, including minnows, chubs, dace, suckers, stone rollers, darters, and sunfish. Mr. Kirby also noted evidence of dead frog, tadpoles, leeches, and worms during his investigation, the report states. When Jurgensen investigated at the Hames property, he noticed a gravel area near the ammonia nitrogen storage tanks that appeared to funnel toward the tile intake. Kent Schmitz, facility manager, told Jurgensen water from a secondary basin was pumped out and allowed to flow through the tile line. Mr. Schmitz stated that it was assumed the water was clean after visual observation, the report states. Mr. Schmitz stated that neither he nor any other employee of Hames Field sampled the water for pollutants prior to its discharge. Jurgensen noted a strong ammonia smell near the tile intake, and tests of the ground nearby showed ammonia nitrogen levels greater than 3 milligrams per liter. The fine amount is based on the economic benefit to the person for not addressing the violation, the severity of the violation, and the culpability of a person or people. Hames's willfully released contaminated water from the facility's secondary containment and catch basin to ground near the tile on a regular basis, the report states. The discharge occurred over an extended period of time, as demonstrated by the channelization in the ground. The Hameses may appeal the order. Fast-moving and severe storms expected in Iowa, by Brittany J. Miller. Iowans should expect fast-moving, severe storms today between 2 and 8 p.m., with eastern Iowa hit between 4 and 6 p.m. Lynn and Johnson counties are in the middle of the area identified in the warning from the National Weather Service's Quad Cities Bureau. The outlook assigns the area as being at moderate risk of severe storms, the second highest level from the Storm Prediction Center. The extreme weather is expected to travel from southwest to northeast at more than 50 miles per hour, giving unprepared residents little time to seek shelter. The storms may bring strong winds of more than 45 miles per hour into tonight, which could be accompanied by lightning, tornadoes, and large hail. Temperatures will fall into the 30s and 40s overnight. The Bureau will issue a storm update this morning. And Cedar Rapids man accused of shooting person numerous times, by Emily Anderson. A Cedar Rapids man was arrested Wednesday on charges related to a shooting March 21st in the 1500 block of Oakland Road Northeast in Cedar Rapids. David Abrams, 29, is charged with willful injury resulting in serious injury, possession of a firearm by a felon, and use of a dangerous weapon in the commission of a crime. He is being held in the Linn County Correctional Center. According to a criminal complaint, Abrams shot a person numerous times in that person's apartment in Oakland Road. The person suffered serious injuries on both thighs that presented a substantial risk of death, the complaint states. The person returned fire, and Abrams suffered a gunshot wound that penetrated his bladder and shattered his hip, according to the complaint. Police responded to the scene just before 11 p.m. March 21st. They found two men suffering gunshot wounds and transported them to the hospital to be treated, according to a news release. The situation that led to shots being fired is under investigation, the complaint states. Turning to page 3, former Iowa City oral surgeon sentenced to 2 years for taking fentanyl, by Trish Mahaffey. Dateline Davenport. A former Iowa City oral surgeon was sentenced Wednesday to 2 years in federal prison for withdrawing fentanyl from vials meant for patients and concealing his crime by adding saline solution to refill the vials. Andrew Charles Hartwig, 55, formerly with Oral Surgery and Dental Implant Center in Iowa City and Mount Pleasant, pleaded in October to one count of tampering with consumer products in the U.S. District Court. Hartwig admitted during a plea hearing to diverting opioids from the office used in dental surgery procedures for his own personal use. Hartwig would remove fentanyl from single or multi-dose vials and replace the drug with saline, which caused the fentanyl to be diluted, according to the plea agreement. He would cut the outer plastic wrapper of the box containing the drug vials, swab the plastic tops of the vial with alcohol, and withdraw the drug with a sterile needle by puncturing the top of the sealed tubes. He would replace what he withdrew with a saline solution, rub the plastic cap with an instrument to conceal the needle puncture, and close the outer plastic wrap of the box with clear tape, the plea stated. On July 3, 2019, the nursing staff first reported their concerns about possible tampering with the outer packaging of the vials to another surgeon in the practice, according to court documents. The box appeared to have been opened and resealed with clear tape. Another nurse told a different surgeon of a similar issue at another office of the practice. The surgeons changed the security code on the drug safe, disabled key access, and installed a security camera in one of the practice's offices, according to the plea. On July 9, 2019, the fentanyl vials in the opened packaging were more closely examined and pinholes were visible on the vial caps. The next day, all vials were quarantined and the offices stopped administering fentanyl. The surgeons then informed Hartwig about what they had found. That night, Hartwig self-reported by email to the Iowa Dental Board and others that he had skimmed fentanyl from the office to deal with chronic lower back pain. He admitted to diluting the fentanyl so the patient still would receive some from the tampered vials. According to court documents, the FDA lab analysis found 299 vials of fentanyl were tampered with at the dental office. However, prosecutors said the office never received any patient complaints regarding insufficient sedation, pain control, or infection. The analysis also found that of the 14 randomly selected punctured vials, 6 were contaminated with bacteria, and all 14 had diluted fentanyl levels of varying degrees, according to court documents. The percentage of fentanyl in those ranged from 5.04% to 99.8%. Hartwig admitted he had been diverting fentanyl to himself from at least April through July 2019. During the investigation in August 2019, one of the surgeons said a nurse had reported another issue with boxes of fentanyl being taped about a year and a half before. According to Iowa Dental Board documents, a settlement agreement was signed by Hartwig on December 3rd, 2019, which suspended his license indefinitely for unprofessional or unethical conduct based on the allegations. His dental license and general anesthesia permit both expired August 31, 2020, according to the board documents. Hartwig also agreed to pay a civil penalty of $10,000, the settlement stated. The money goes to the state's general fund. In December 2021, a surgeon notified investigators that an electrician had been installing a light in the ceiling of one of the dentist's restrooms and found 6 vials in a box hidden in the ceiling. 5 boxes were labeled as fentanyl, and 1 was another painkiller with an expiration date of 2015 and another for 2016, according to court documents. Those vials were tested by the FDA and found to have punctures on the surfaces of the stopper, and the fentanyl was heavily diluted. Prosecutors, in a sentencing document, asked the court for a prison sentence because Hartwig's actions violated patients' trust and damaged the integrity of the healthcare system. The defendant jeopardized the livelihood of his colleagues through his criminal acts, Assistant U.S. Attorney Amy Jennings said in the document. She recommended 30 months in prison. U.S. District Judge Rebecca Goodgame-Ebinger sentenced Hartwig to 24 months in prison. She also ordered him to pay a $50,000 fine and be on 2 years of supervised release after serving his prison term. Complaint: Man Started Fight Before Shooting, by Emily Anderson, Dateline Marion. A Cedar Rapids man arrested Wednesday on murder charges reportedly started a verbal fight with the victim and punched him before fatally shooting him, according to a criminal complaint. Duval Walker, 28, is accused of fatally shooting Cameron Barnes, 32, at Cocktails & Company, 1625 Blair's Ferry Road, Marion, on March 17th. He was arrested Wednesday in Waterloo by U.S. Marshals and charged with first-degree murder, possession of a firearm or offensive weapon by a felon, and going armed with intent. According to a criminal complaint, Walker was captured on surveillance video, starting a fight with Barnes and then punching him in the face. A fight followed, and Barnes and Walker were separated, the complaint states. Walker then pulled out a handgun and hid it behind his leg while he charged at Barnes, who he shot once, according to the complaint. A warrant was issued for Walker's arrest March 21st. After he was taken into custody Wednesday, he was transported to the Linn County Jail. Turning to the Insight page and the guest column by Brad Anderson. Snap changes could hurt older Iowans. In recent years, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, benefits have been an essential component of keeping food on the table for thousands of Iowa families as costs soared and jobs were lost due to the pandemic. Iowa legislators are now considering bills that would introduce burdensome asset tests to verify SNAP eligibility. Nearly 34,000 older Iowans receive SNAP benefits, and the changes being considered by the Iowa legislature would likely result in needy families being removed from the program. AARP believes all eligible Iowans should have access to public assistance programming when they need it, and obtaining this assistance should be straightforward and efficient. As written, the provisions outlined in House File 613 to establish and verify asset limits, in addition to the current income eligibility requirements to receive SNAP, create additional bureaucratic hoops for seniors and caregivers. In Iowa, there are approximately 330,000 unpaid caregivers providing much-needed care to loved ones. Many caregivers work part or even full-time jobs while running errands, doing chores, and fixing meals for older family members. Implementing the asset test proposed in House File 613 could have unintended consequences for caregivers, resulting in a devastating financial burden. Imagine being a caregiver to an elderly mother who moved into your home. She was recently diagnosed with Alzheimer's, is unable to bathe herself, and struggles with general mobility, but as a lifelong cook, still enjoys participating in the making of meals in a supervised manner. Under current law, your mother is now considered part of your SNAP household since she lives under your roof and you purchase and prepare meals together. Your mother receives her monthly Social Security income, brought with her a car that she has owned for many years, though she no longer drives, and ultimately needs 24/7 care as her Alzheimer's continues to progress. As a result, you are no longer able to work and rely on your mother's Social Security income to cover your expenses. With the proposed changes in House File 613, though your mother brings little to the table from an income perspective, her assets would now count against you. So, what does this mean? If the combination of your total assets and her total assets exceed the proposed $15,000 threshold, you and your mother may not be SNAP eligible. Today, only 36% of eligible seniors in Iowa receive SNAP benefits, a 14-year low. Why is this? The answer is complex, though many would argue the programs are not meeting recipients where they are and in the ways they need. Rather than creating barriers, we should be working to find ways to make life easier for older Iowans and our unpaid caregivers through tax credits, innovation, and caregiver education. AARP recognizes the importance of proper management of public funding and believes existing laws adequately prevent fraud, waste, and abuse within the SNAP program. We stand ready to work with the state to assist in promoting the SNAP program. We believe this is a better approach for supporting older Iowans and their caregivers. And that piece was written by Brad Anderson, and he is AARP's Iowa State Director. And this is the Gazette editorial. Hawkeyes grab the spotlight. Iowa's women's basketball team will make history tonight, returning to the NCAA Final Four for the first time in 30 years and for the first time under longtime head coach Lisa Bluter. The eyes of Iowans, already captivated by the team's success, will be on American Airlines Center in Dallas for the scheduled 8 p.m. tip-off against South Carolina. It will be a tall order for the Hawkeyes. South Carolina is 36-0 and the defending national champions. The Gamecocks are favored by double digits. But can anyone who has followed this magical season really count Iowa out? Of course, the Hawkeyes have Caitlin Clark, a junior guard from West Des Moines, who is the most electrifying player in college basketball, in the men's or women's game. When she's not dropping stunning three-point shots from seemingly another zip code, she's zipping jaw-dropping passes to teammates such as Monica Cinzano, Gabby Marshall, and McKenna Warnock, and others. In the Hawks' win over Louisville in the Elite Eight, Clark finished with 41 points, 12 assists, and 10 rebounds, the first 40-point triple-double in NCAA tournament history. What makes Caitlin's 40-point triple-double so special is the fact so many players never had one. Not me, Michael Jordan, or Larry Bird, tweeted Los Angeles Laker great Irvin Magic Johnson, among many pro athletes and celebrities who marveled at Clark's performance. But what really makes Iowa so special is teamwork. The chemistry of this team is obvious to anyone who watches Iowa. They genuinely enjoy playing basketball together. It's fun to watch them having fun slicing up opponents. It's a must-see basketball played at a very high level. And while the Hawkeyes have brought themselves historic success and joy to Iowans, they've also helped make a strong case that women's college basketball is no second-class sport. Game attendance and television ratings jumped sharply during this tournament. Of course, Clark's greatest show on hardwood has contributed with 2.5 million viewers watching Iowa versus Louisville on ESPN. But it's also been a tournament filled with compelling stories, amazing upsets of top-seeded teams, and games going down to the wire and down the bracket, up and down the bracket. It's been the sort of basketball showcase that begs the question as to why a top-quality coach such as Bluter makes so much less than her counterparts in the men's game, and some men who coach women's teams. Also, why did the top women's basketball players graduate to a pro league, the WNBA, that pays a tiny fraction of the tens of millions of dollars paid annually to the top NBA players? But those issues are for another day. Tonight, the Hawkeyes have earned their place in the national spotlight. Win or lose, they've given us the gift of witnessing one of the greatest basketball teams to ever wear an Iowa uniform. Go Hawks! And that was the Gazette's editorial. You are listening to a reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, March 31st, 2023, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Next, we'll turn to today's obituaries. Ronald J. Raymond, Cedar Rapids. Ronald J. Raymond, 89, of Cedar Rapids, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, March 29, 2023, at the Dennison Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy, surrounded by his loving family. Visitation will be from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, April 2nd, at Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center, located at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest, Cedar Rapids. Celebration of Life services will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, April 3rd, at Brosh Chapel. Burial will follow in Linwood Cemetery, where military rites will be conducted. Dolores Mary Cornwall, Iowa City. Dolores Mary Cornwall of Iowa City died March 28, 2023, at Briarwood Healthcare Center. Cremation has taken place in accordance with her wishes, and no services are being planned at this time. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Iowa City Hospice. Dwayne Cronbaugh, Blairstown. Dwayne Cronbaugh, 83, of Blairstown, passed away peacefully at home on Thursday, March 30, 2023. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 31st, at the Phillips Funeral Home in Blairstown. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 1st, at Blairstown Presbyterian Church, with the Reverend Diane Voorhees officiating. Interment will be held at Pleasant Hill Cemetery near Blairstown. Luncheon will follow the burial and will be held at the church. In lieu of flowers, multiple memorial funds have been established and will be distributed. Mary Jo Streb, Iowa City. Mary Jo Streb, 88, of Iowa City, died on March 27, 2023, at Oak Knoll Retirement Community. Memorial services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 4th, at St. Patrick Catholic Church, Iowa City. Burial will follow at St. Joseph Cemetery, Iowa City. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday at St. Patrick Catholic Church, where a rosary will be recited at 3:30 p.m. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made toward the St. Patrick Catholic Church or the loft at the Oak Knoll Foundation. Carol Marie Schulte, Monona. Carol Marie Schulte, 84, of Monona, Iowa, passed away Monday, March 27, 2023, at Northgate Care Center in Waukon, Iowa. Massive Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. Monday, April 3rd, at St. Mary Catholic Church in McGregor, Iowa. A visitation will be held from 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday, April 2nd, at Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Monona. There will also be a one-hour visitation before the Mass at the church on Monday. Interment will follow at St. Mary Catholic Church in McGregor, Iowa. Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Monona, Iowa, is assisting the family with arrangements. In other notices, Cedar Rapids. Donald McGallagot, 91, died Thursday, March 30th, 2023, Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center at Cedar Rapids. Dyersville, Jean A. Knepper, 91, died Tuesday, March 28th, 2023, Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Marion Gary Blassen, 66, died Thursday, March 30th, 2023, Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Marion. Postville, Wilma Ruth Kugel, 96, died Monday, March 27, 2023, Schutte Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Postville. Wadena Robert Blue, 86, died Thursday, March 30, 2023, Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home, Olwine. And Williamsburg, Deborah K. Jones, 69, died Thursday, March 30th, 2023, Powell Funeral Home, Williamsburg. Turning to the sports page and prep girls tennis, West aims to restore program's aura by Mike Condon. Dateline, Iowa City. Brenda Guan knows all about Iowa City West girls' tennis tradition. The first-year coach said that aura has faded in recent years. I don't think this program has fulfilled its fullest potential in the last 15 years, especially when you consider the resources and opportunities the players in this town enjoy, she said. Coming from a championship-winning program in college, I see that potential in West High, but I also see a lot of complacency. Guan, who played at Ankeny Centennial before moving on to Grinnell College, credited longtime West coach Kay DeLeo for building West into a power in the mid-2000s, but said the program, although solid, has not really performed to that level since. I used to drive 1 hour down and back every day to West Des Moines just to play at an indoor facility over the winter months, Guan said. Iowa City players live with the Hawkeye Tennis and Recreation Center and all its resources in their backyard. To have only one team title since 2007 is not good enough. Iowa City should be churning out high-level NCAA Division III and Division I caliber players left and right. West is coming off a rough season that saw coach Amy Villarini placed on administrative leave after many of the team's top players from the 2021 Class 2A state runner-up team elected not to play, citing harassment and bullying tactics on Villarini's part. Those charges were found to be without merit after an investigation by the Iowa City Community School District. Ann Burnett took over the team, and Guan, who is an assistant tennis professional at the North Dodge Athletic Club, along with studying for her doctorate at the University of Iowa College of Law, came on as a volunteer assistant. I was there as a volunteer last year through the aftermath of it all, mostly to support Anne when she was asked to fill in as the interim coach, Guan said. But I really hold on to the fact that I was an outsider looking in and someone who can be a fresh face for this program. The fresh face Guan brings will come with high expectations for her players. I can also tell these girls are excited for the clean slate I offer, she said. Going into the season, I want to see a commitment from each player who makes the varsity team to create success on a group level. For example, she is requiring all her players to attend at least one Iowa match this season, citing the fact the Hawkeye players show what it is like to fight for their teammates and coaches. My hope is my players will seek to follow their example and learn from their shortcomings to become better teammates and leaders themselves, she said. West has a tough test in its opener, hitting the road against number 2 Cedar Rapids, Washington on Friday. Guan said she likes what she sees in her players so far. It feels like every week I get an email from school staff saying another school group or club has qualified for some prestigious statewide or even national event, and I know better now than to be surprised when a player's name is on the list, she said. These girls are obviously highly driven to succeed in all their endeavors, and that excites me because of the connection between on- and off-court success. Turning to the sideline column, Iowans in the NBA. Murray breaks rookie record for three-pointers. Keegan Murray set the NBA record for three-pointers in a season by a rookie Wednesday night. The forward from Cedar Rapids Prairie and the University of Iowa made three three-pointers in the Sacramento Kings' 120-80 win over the Portland Trail Blazers to give him 188 this season. That broke the rookie record of Donovan Mitchell's 187, set in the 2017-18 season when he was with the Utah Jazz. I think it's crazy just because it comes all in the flow of our offense, Murray told reporters. I feel like I really don't do anything special. We have a lot of guys who know how to play make, so I'm able to knock down shots, and that's kind of an attribute to them, just finding me in the flow of our offense. Murray is averaging 11.9 points in 74 games played. He was started all but two of those. In women's basketball, tonight's watch party at Carver canceled. Due to the severe weather in eastern Iowa today, the watch party scheduled at Carver Hawkeye Arena for the Iowa women's basketball Final Four game versus South Carolina has been canceled. Damaging winds, large hail, and tornadoes are possible for the area. The athletics department made the decision in the best interest of the safety of Hawkeye fans and staff. If Iowa advances, details of a national championship watch party at Carver Hawkeye Arena will be announced on Saturday. In Iowa State athletics, Cyclone Tailgate Tour set for Cedar Rapids on May 23rd. Dateline Ames. The annual Cyclone Tailgate Tour will embark on a 12-stop tour throughout the state of Iowa, starting in Patton and Council Bluffs on May 15th. Each stop is free and open to the public and will include athletics director Jamie Pollard, football coach Matt Campbell, men's basketball coach T.J. Otzelberger, women's basketball coach Bill Fennelly, volleyball coach Christy Johnson Lynch, and wrestling coach Kevin Dresser. The tour will stop in Cedar Rapids on May 23rd at Veterans Memorial Coliseum, running from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. And auto racing. Davenport Speedway opens season tonight. Dateline Davenport. The battle for track championships start tonight at the Davenport Speedway with the Kohler Electric season opener. The IMCA late models will race for $1,000 to win. Other classes in action are IMCA Modifieds, IMCA Sport Mods, Outlaw Stock Cars, Sport Compacts, and new this season, IMCA Stock Cars. In Iowa football, Finding the Best by Jeff Johnson, Dateline Iowa City. Jack Campbell is gone. Seth Benson is gone. You all know that. I miss those guys for sure, defensive lineman Joe Evans said after his Iowa football team concluded practice Thursday morning. Jack is one of my best friends. Seth is one of my best friends. I came in with Seth. Jack came in the year after I did. Having them around was always nice. So yeah, it has been weird. But I am excited to see what those linebackers can do this year. Everyone is, actually. Iowa's defense has a lot of experience virtually everywhere except that position. Butkus Award winner Campbell is on to the NFL after an incredible Hawkeyes career. Benson was a very productive starter as well. Justin Jacobs was expected to be a starter this year, but surprisingly entered the transfer portal and ended up at Oregon. All ACC linebacker Nick Jackson tags in this summer as a graduate transfer from Virginia. You'd have to think he's a lock to be a starter. So this spring is about potentially cementing that other starter and developing some depth. We definitely lost some leadership, said Iowa's Jay Higgins. That's why guys like myself have to step up. Kyler Fisher, the older linebackers in the room. We understand what we lost, and we understand where we need to be. I feel like that's important for us. I mean, I've been learning from Jack for the last 3 years. Him leaving just gave me the opportunity to continue what he focused on and what he taught me. Now it's my job to teach it to the younger backers. Iowa's initial spring depth chart listed Higgins, a senior from Indianapolis, as a starter in the middle, backed up by sophomore Jaden Harrell. Higgins essentially was Iowa's number three linebacker last season, while Harrell has little playing experience. Sophomore Carson Sherrar, another inexperienced guy, was listed as starting weak side backer, with senior Fisher his backup. Walk-on Kelby Thielander, who hasn't played a snap, was listed as top option at the Leo position when Iowa goes with a three linebacker look. Sebastian Castro has starting experience at the cash position when Iowa wants a 5-DB look. It's been great so far, said Harrell from Urbandale. Obviously, people are playing all the different positions, all three linebacker spots. Having that in the back of your mind pushes you harder. Knowing that all three spots are kind of open right now makes everybody work harder and, as a core, will get better. We're just trying to keep it competitive, and I feel like linebackers coach Seth Wallace does a good job of doing that, Higgins said. Just like all springs. We're playing all positions. I'm playing Mike Backer. I'm playing Will. I'm playing Leo. When your room is able to rotate at every position at linebacker, it keeps guys on their toes. When it comes to the depth chart, we preach that we're going to go with the best linebacker that's available. The strong bet is Higgins will be one of those. He had 39 tackles last season, including 11 in a win at Northwestern. Spring ball is the best opportunity for a young guy, Higgins said. The Hawkeyes have multiple pieces up front on the line. The starters in the secondary are pretty much cemented, though depth is a question mark. If guys like Higgins, Jackson, Sharer, Harrell, etc. do their things, this should be yet another exceptional Iowa defense. For me, I'm super focused on the D-line, but I've seen some great things, great communication from them, Evans said. They're coming out and giving great effort, just a great group of guys. I'm really excited to see them continue to improve. We have standards for a reason, and the standards need to be met, Higgins said. Nothing shy of the standard is acceptable. We've got a lot of talent. Plenty of guys are returning. Turning to indoor soccer, Iowa Raptors playing for a championship in Texas this weekend by Nathan Ford. Kurt Lewis was familiar with the type of soccer talent he would be working with as Iowa Raptors men's indoor soccer coach this winter. The 20-year-old Cedar Rapids Prairie boys soccer coach knew some players from their days in the Mississippi Valley Conference, others from last summer's Raptors men's outdoor team who practiced after the women's team Lewis coached. We thought we'd be very athletic. We thought we'd be a very good soccer team, Lewis said. We didn't know how that would translate into being a good indoor team. The Raptors' first Major Arena Soccer League II season so far has translated into a North Division title and a spot in the four-team playoffs. Iowa, based out of Cedar Rapids, will face the Amarillo Bombers in an MASL II semifinal game at 3 p.m. today at Mesquite Arena in Mesquite, Texas. The championship game is Saturday at 2 p.m., the consolation at 11:30 a.m. The Raptors and Rochester Lancers finished with 23 points in the regular season, with Iowa winning the North tiebreaker by securing 7 points to Rochester's 5 in their head-to-head meetings. Iowa actually had a -7 goal differential, but frequently turned close games into wins. It was 6-1-2 in games decided by 2 goals or fewer, including a 5-4 win at Rochester last Friday that clinched the division. Jonah Dancer scored the winner with 36 seconds remaining to hand the Lancers their first home defeat. It was perhaps the most important of the Iowa City High alums' team-high 17 goals. The thing I'm probably the most proud of our organization is we are truly amateurs, Lewis said. We play a lot of teams that have major area soccer league players on loan. Now, teams have reached out to the Raptors about possible affiliation agreements. The Arena Soccer Spotlight will shine on the organization this weekend, as well as on the player who could move up to the MASL. They're all great guys, Lewis said. I think we've got some really great local talent that's playing with us. We have some guys that have ambitions to get to M1. This is Girls Tennis 2023, Teams and Players to Watch. Teams, Iowa City West. After a year of turmoil in 2022, the Trojans are starting fresh under new coach Brenda Guan. Following a third-place state finish in 2021, most of that team elected not to play last season, citing harassment and bullying tactics against former coach Amy Villarini, which was found to be without merit after an investigation by the Iowa City Community School District. Senior Jay Mascardo and junior Maggie Shin were part of that team and have returned to the roster. West is ranked 6th in the preseason Class 2A state poll put out by Iowa High School Tennis. Sophomore Sasha Pastinakov, a Cedar Rapids Prairie transfer, was a state singles qualifier in 2022. Junior Delmira Jara, along with sophomores Claire Hahn, Marie Steyer and Jane Lamb all saw varsity action in 2022. They are hungry to contribute to the legacy of this program, Guan said. Cedar Rapids Xavier. It will be a rebuilding year for Coach Matt Foxhoven. His Saints, ranked number 4 in the preseason poll, were the Class 1A state runners-up in 2022. The team included state singles champion Ella Tallett and doubles champs Allie Berger and Courtney Carstensen. Those players are now playing collegiately. In fact, only one regular, junior Avery Link, is back from that team. Seniors Allie Schumann and Isabel Barnes have waited their turns, and this will be their chance to shine in their final prep season. Others expected to contribute include junior Olivia Cobb and sophomores Isabel Tobin and Ruby Smith. We have 4 new girls in the lineup, but they have played a lot of tennis this year and have tournament experience, Foxhoven said. Cedar Rapids, Washington. One of Foxhoven's former Xavier players, Nina Marquardt, takes over a 2A state title contender at Washington. A solid team might be a bit of an understatement. The Warriors, ranked 2nd behind West Des Moines Dowling in the preseason state rankings, returned 2 of the state's top players in senior Catherine Zylstra and junior Caitlin Koch. The duo combined to win the 2A doubles title and lead Washington to a third-place finish in the team race. Koch is ranked 2nd and Zylstra 5th in the preseason singles rankings. Seniors Maya Messenger, singles, and Chloe Palmer, doubles with the 2022 graduate Liberty Wickham, also were state qualifiers. Senior Peyton Caldwell also returns. Players. Ella Gilbert, Iowa City Liberty, is a junior. She finished 6th in Class 2A singles in 2022. Natalie Hartman, Marion, a junior, finished 7th in Class 1A doubles with 2022 graduate Gracie Goad. Caitlin Koch, Cedar Rapids, Washington, is a junior. She won the 2022 2A state doubles title with teammate Catherine Zylstra. Myra Messenger, Cedar Rapids, Washington, junior, Class 2A state qualifier in 2022. Chloe Palmer, Cedar Rapids, Washington, senior, Class 2A state doubles qualifier with 2022 graduate Liberty Wickham. Sasha Postinkov, Iowa City West, sophomore, Class 2A state qualifier in 2022 while playing for Cedar Rapids Prairie. Annalise Scrade, Decora, senior, finished 3rd in Class 1A doubles with 2022 graduate Mara Holland. Catherine Zylstra, Cedar Rapids, Washington, senior, won 2022 Class 2A state doubles title with teammate Caitlin Koch. And we'll finish with this story. 2 Johnson County fire departments using federal grant to recruit firefighters by Emily Anderson. The North Liberty and Tiffin fire departments are working to expand recruitment and services using money from a federal grant program designed to help improve staffing for fire departments. The North Liberty Fire Department received a Staffing for Adequate Fire and Emergency Response, or SAFER, grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency in September. The grant, for $1,013,539, will be received over a 3-year period. The department is using the grant to fund 3 full-time firefighting positions, which will be the first full-time firefighters in the department. The department hired its first full-time chief, Brian Paltz, in 2017 and has seen continued growth since then. The new firefighters have been hired and will start working with the department in April, according to a news release issued Monday. Each position will work a 24-hour schedule, then be off for 48 hours. This will allow the city to always have 1 full-time firefighter on duty. The full-time firefighter on duty will help supervise 2 part-time firefighters, creating a 3-person crew every night. With North Liberty's continued growth and with its increasing number of emergency calls, this is a big win for the community, Platt said in the release. It's the result of city officials and first responders' hard work and determination. The North Liberty Department is also working toward building a 2nd fire station, a response to growth in the city. And in Tiffin, The Tiffin Fire Department also has been seeing increased response times and growth in the city. According to a news release issued by the city Tuesday, the number of calls for service has increased from 211 in 2019 to 506 in 2022. In response to this growth, the city recently hired its first full-time fire department employee, a fire marshal slash code enforcement officer. The city also applied for $604,470 in SAFER grant, which was awarded March 23rd. The grant will be used to improve recruitment and retention efforts of volunteer firefighters. Funds will be used for advertising, providing personal protective equipment and training for recruits, and offering incentives and awards for volunteers to provide staffing coverage and standby for calls, according to the release. When someone calls 911 to report an emergency, they deserve a timely response by trained firefighters with the equipment and resources needed to safely mitigate the emergency, Skylar Limpkeman, City Council member and volunteer fire captain, said in the release. Limpkeman wrote a grant application for the department and has been a vocal advocate on the City Council for the growing fire department. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, March 31st, 2023. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.